And away we go with our midweek edition. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster. My buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass on this Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. And Tom, that 100-degree temperature, when I first saw that on Facebook, that the Weather Service had tweeted that we hit 100 at 12:55, I said, somebody's going to have to pull that back, because 10 minutes even before that, it was 96 degrees.
It kind of snuck up on us.
There had to have been some really weird anomaly, like a little bit of a hot wind gust that then dissipated after that we hit 100 degrees.
Well, let's see. The airport is where the National Weather Service gets their official local area temperatures. Maybe it was a jet engine exhaust.
Could be, because then by 1 o'clock it was down to like 96 or 97, but it goes into the record books as the third earliest 100-degree reading in Tucson.
An anomaly? How do you say that word?
Anomaly. Weird.
One of those things.
Yep. It is our 12th year now on the radio project, 34 years here in television and radio in Tucson, our program broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice. For trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line, which we will utilize here in a few moments, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line, Dr. Matt Hines, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat, representing District Number 2. Dr. Hines, how are you?
Doing well, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. But myself, like a lot of people, are still trying to process what has gone on over the last couple of weeks with this whole thing with now former Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry. You must have been shocked, may have been putting it lightly, when my friend Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com called you a couple of weeks ago to inform you that Mr. Huckleberry actually retired 9 months ago and had begun collecting his pension. Let's talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, happy to. And you're absolutely right, because while that was something that we, as a board, allowed Mr. Huckleberry to include in his employment contract that we approved, I believe, January 2021, a provision to allow him to come back and work after collecting starting to collect some of his owed, his pension benefits. I think all of us thought, I guess maybe assumed, we should have probably written this better, but that there would be some notice to us, his employers, right, that this was happening. And that definitely did not occur. And in fact, as we heard from the public meetings, that not only did it not occur, but Mr. Huckleberry specifically asked that those staff members closest to him that did know were ordered to not reveal it. And that really bothers me.
It's bizarre, I'll tell you. Of course, the easy, transparent thing would have been for Mr. Huckleberry 9 months ago just to say, I've decided to retire. And then he was perfectly within his contract to, at that time, begin collecting the pension. And from a transparent point of view, I'm still scratching my head, Dr. Hines, about this.
Me too. And that's what I've said this repeatedly to my staff, to my colleagues on the board, to Dylan Smith and others. Like, the behavior to me, I mean, I watch as a physician, I learn a lot from watching human behavior. And sometimes, especially in the political world, sometimes the human speech and the words we say does not necessarily line up with the behaviors. And so it's a huge mismatch, because he's well within his rights to do this. There was nothing unlawful. This is the way the state retirement system works. I think for a lot of people who aren't familiar with it, it does seem a little strange to retire, but you don't have a big party and then go away forever. You still you still work. But that is all legal. And so to behave, I mean, the behavior makes me suspicious, like somehow he was doing something he felt was inappropriate or untoward or I don't know why the sneaking around and almost criminal-like cover-up situation, and though there is no unlawful activity that I have been able to determine. So I don't get it.
Well, and it puts those that were told don't say anything in a really bad position, Dr. Hines, because that's
absolutely
their boss.
Right.
And, you know, what are they going to do? If they then feel they've got to kind of blow the whistle on, it just really, it's a bad situation.
Is the head of HR, and I'm not, this isn't specific to any one of these folks that may have known this, I don't know that she did, but as an example, if, you know, when you're Mr. Huckleberry and you have hired probably yourself, all of these 7,000 people, is the head of HR that you hired however many years ago going to go around her boss to the board to say, hey, there's a thing here? It was just inappropriate. And it really did kind of, it's such an inartful, just not a very graceful exit. And by and large, I think Mr. Huckleberry did an amazing job as a financial, especially from a fiduciary standpoint. The county has been very solvent, and we had so much extra cash in the bank coming into the pandemic because of his stewardship,
yes,
that we were able to front a lot of money for pandemic-related expenses that many other counties could not do. They had to wait extra months for the federal government to get in gear. We were able to start funding stuff like additional testing and all sorts of other things right away. And that's I credit Mr. Huckleberry's excellent financial stewardship of the county with that. And, you know, and that's the kind of stuff we should be talking about, not this really weird exit.
All right, let's take a call. Let's go to the live line. The former owner of this radio station, KVOI, and now the head of Good News Communications Public Relations, Doug Martin. Doug, how are you?
Very good, Bill. Thank you. And Dr. Hines, I appreciate you and your answers. There is one other thing I'd like you to look at, besides the bad exit and that he should have notified you and all that. To me, it speaks to a culture in the county government that has been created over decades, where it's basically a patronage system, where if you're loyal and you do what's right, you're not going to get fired. And so that whole culture is I think something you're going to have to deal with. And, you know, Chuck is a brilliant guy. He's a great manager, but there's also something there that doesn't smell right. And also just how Chuck has fought annexation over the years, like with Vail. He liked to keep the county government huge, which, you know, our county's bigger than Maricopa County. So I think there's an issue there to look at that you all will have to, you know, really examine, because I think for too long the supervisors just let him run things and they were happy. You know, I think that's why we're where we're at today.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. Go ahead, Dr. Hines.
Sure. Excellent points. And thank you, Mr. Martin, for your comments. I agree. We have a new board of supervisors with 60%, 60% new. We have three new supervisors starting last year. And now we have a new county administrator. I do think up until last year, Chuck was kind of supervising the board instead of the other way around, in many aspects. So, and I think that's over. I know it's over now. And I have absolute confidence in Ms. Lesher and for her leadership. Excuse me, my allergies are conspiring to suffocate me.
Me too. Me too.
I do have a lot of confidence in her leadership. I mean, this is a woman who, on behalf of Janet Napolitano, ran the Department of Homeland Security 58, sometimes, rival security agencies that did not always work well together. She has a lot of incredibly relevant experience at running large systems like this. And I think she is going to be able to really kind of change things up a bit. A lot of folks have been retiring. I know that, I'm fully confident that she's going to be making some changes and helping us to prevent anything like this from happening again.
Yeah, I have all sorts of respect for Jan, who I've known over 30 years and who, by the way, will be our Friday Focus interview. She'll be with me in studio on Friday along with Dan Scheer at the Green Valley News. And Jan is the first woman to be appointed as the permanent Pima County Administrator. And I think it's worth mentioning, Dr. Hines, that you had some questions about why Jan would not be coming in at actually a higher salary than she agreed to.
I understand that the some of this murkiness surrounding Mr. Huckleberry's exit really clouded things and put a lot of additional scrutiny on this contracting process. And I think that's probably why she felt the need to not just mirror his exact salary, which was $292,000. It's a high number. It's the highest paid county position, as I think it should be. But I don't like the optics of of paying the first woman county administrator less. That she was doing not only her job as the principal deputy county administrator, as well as being the acting county administrator for the past 6 months more, you know, due to the tragic accident, of course. So I you know, she wasn't collecting two salaries. I think she should have, frankly, had the contract start late last year, but I think she should be getting the same. And I'm hoping that as a board, we're going to do three or six month evaluations to kind of see how things are going with our new county administrator. I would like to propose that we have some merit-based raises to get things a little bit higher for her. And frankly, she's not going to do this forever. You know, we're fortunate to have her here for as long as she wants to stay. But like looking to years into the future, when we do have to do a national search, we're not going to be able to bring someone in to manage a county of 1.1 million people with 7,000 employees for any less than $300,000, probably $350,000. It's just the way things are. We're not going to get experienced people like we're fortunate to have with Chuck and with Jan.
I did want to circle back because now that it just came to me, I know that Doug had at Mr. Martin had a two-part question. He also talked about some of Mr. Huckleberry's feelings about annexation. Did you have any thoughts on that, Matt, before we take our break?
Oh, that's right. For forgetting that. I'm certainly not as allergic to that as it sounds like Mr. Huckleberry was. I think what we need to do is make sure that regardless of the municipality or potential for municipality, we need to do what's best for the community. And in some cases, that's going to be what makes the most sense. And so I'm not dead set opposed to that. Yes, that would shrink the population of unincorporated Pima County, but overall, it could be a significant benefit to the residents in those areas. So I think that's something that can be looked at for sure.
And before we do leave this issue about Mr. Huckleberry, we all wish him well, Dr. Hines.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my goodness, this accident, and you being in the medical community, fully understand a traumatic brain injury, punctured lung, broken ribs, hospitalized for nearly a month, a real tough road to recovery.
No, absolutely. And I would just, to be completely frank, I know with medical stuff, sometimes it's a little bit, you know, it's a little jarring for folks, but I did not expect him to survive based on the accident as described to me, based on some of the witnesses I spoke to or I heard from early on. 71-year-old gentleman, being struck at the speed he was struck, going the distance through the air that he and landing on his head, right? Shredding his bike helmet. Thank God for bike helmets. Just
yes.
A point for those.
Yes.
The only reason Chuck is alive is that bike helmet. But even with that bike helmet, I was, you know, the bleeding in the brain, all that kind of stuff. It's just not, thank God he was such an avid cyclist and so healthy overall that he could survive this, because most people in that situation, I believe, would not have made it even to the hospital.
So when you first heard this as a medical professional, you were saying to yourself, I can't believe he's alive.
Yes. And I know that sounds so terribly negative. I mean that only because of my experience. it's just not. I was pleased that he was alive. I had no idea what his functional status would end up being, but I was pretty stunned that he had a pulse, to be honest.
All right, we do need to take the break, and Rick, I know you're holding. We have a call. And we'll take you, Rick, right after the break. But right now I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Open right now for lunch. Steve, the owner, opens the doors at 6:30. Find out why people are waiting in line when they open the doors. It won't take you long to find out when you go up there and then look at the bakery case. They've got some very tempting items for you. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And hope you will take part in enjoying Mona's Danish Bakery. When we come back, Dr. Matt Hines, Pima County Supervisor, and Rick Rennell will be up first. Rick has called us. He's waiting on the live line. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things in their 51st year, open daily, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Beautiful 13-acre site. Everything you need for your spring gardening. And with temperatures now, yesterday we hit 100. This would be a good time to go over to Green Things and ask their very knowledgeable staff, what will survive
the very hot temperatures right up until the summer rains, which we hope will be very robust. All right, we have former Tucson mayoral candidate Rick Grinnell, who's been waiting very patiently to speak with Pima County Supervisor, Democrat District 2, Dr. Matt Hines. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, Matt, my recollection is that a year ago this past January, the majority of the board approved Chuck Huckleberry's contract. And my question, if my recollection is correct, my question is, didn't you all read the contract? Because even though Mr. Huckleberry did everything legal, I think the incompetence of the supervisors here really needs to be addressed, and the taxpayers shouldn't be left flipping the bill to come out of your personal office budgets. I'm very disappointed in the way the supervisors are making excuses. Oh, it's already passed, already done. And you all are responsible, right? It was always a premise that you all worked for Mr. Huckleberry instead of the way it should have been, how Mr. Huckleberry worked for you. So I'll leave it there.
Thank you. Go ahead, Matt Hines.
Yeah, and thank you for your comments, Mr. Grinnell. I agree. This is on the supervisors, and I believe it was a 4-1 vote to approve Mr. Huckleberry's contract January of last year. I did vote to approve it. There was a provision that let Mr. Huckleberry transition to a contracted worker status, and that he triggered again without us knowing. And that was when in reviewing that language, it was, you know, it was ambiguously worded, and that was on us. I did have some concerns with the term of the contract, which I talked about at the time. I was thinking a one-year contract with Mr. Huckleberry, and then maybe working to transition or national search or however we were going to, you know, move forward after that would have made more sense. But I was, I was outvoted on that one. So, but in this contract with Jan Lesher, I think it's important to point out multiple things. Most of those relatively expensive bells and whistles, $26,000 extra for retirement funding and $15,000 for a 401k, and I think $34,000 annually of extra paid sick and just paid leave time. All of those, like 70-something thousand dollars worth of additional bells and whistles that Mr. Huckleberry had written into his contract, we removed all of them. Jan removed them herself, frankly. And the provision that allows for that ability for the county, current county administrator to come back as a contract worker, potentially without telling the board, that entire paragraph is gone. So we have learned, and this is, I think, a much better, clearer, more well-written contract that we approved.
All right, Rick Grinnell, thank you for your comment. Let's talk here briefly. We've got about 3 minutes left. These new district boundaries, you and your colleagues, Dr. Hines, will be voting on the new district boundaries. District 2, are there going to be any changes for your district?
You know, I'm actually fairly pleased with these districts. The District 2 for my own district does lose a heavily Latino precinct on the western edge that kind of juts over into District 5. So it makes it a cleaner line. And then I believe it's 2 or 3 precincts. I pick up a couple of precincts in Saurita. I know Saurita has been, and the mayor told me this personally when we met last year, that they would prefer to have they would like to have pretty much all of the municipality in one supervisorial district. And it looks like if these maps get approved, it will be in District 2.
All right. And a medical question about COVID before we go. I know the numbers now are released once a week. They're still relatively things, thank goodness, are very quiet COVID-wise, but hospitals across the country may not have COVID patients, but what they do have, and maybe this is going on where you're working at TMC, a backlog of 2 years of people who had put off surgeries.
Gosh, yes, it's been and remember, so there's people that suffer from COVID and passed from COVID. There are people that were unable to get
urgently needed, medically necessary, but elective surgeries like heart bypasses, open heart surgeries. And then there's this third category of patient, and we're dealing with the massive influx of these, as you referenced. And that's folks that didn't see the oncologist for 2 years, didn't go to their kidney doctor for a year and a half, didn't check in with their cardiologist, and everything is just a mess. All of their health conditions have degenerated and become more severe and gone from acute, have gone from chronic to acute, requiring them to come into one of our ERs. Our hospitals are in some cases more crowded than during the pandemic, and it's not with COVID patients.
No, and this is something that's just going to have to be worked out as down the road. It's going to take time.
It's going to be years. It's going to be taking us years to catch up.
Wow. All right, Dr. Matt Hines, good catching up with you, and hope you have a great rest of the day. Thank you, Dr. Hines.
Sure thing. Thank you, Bill.
All right. We're going to pause right here. Midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show, midway point of the program. Up next, legendary Tucson-based travel writer Tom Miller out with his memoir. We'll talk with Tom right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The legendary Tucson-based travel writer Tom Miller is out with his memoir. It's titled, Where Was I?
a travel writer's memoir. Tom, who has suffered from Parkinson's disease for more than a decade, is author of a series of travel classics, including The Panama Hat Trail, On the Border, Revenge of the Saguaro, and Trading with the Enemy, his book that was first released back in 2008, critically acclaimed book about Cuba. Tom's with us now on the live line. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm feeling better today than ever.
Good. We caught you on a really good day, it sounds like.
Well said. Yes, that's true.
How have you handled this past decade dealing with Parkinson's?
Well, I was in the middle of researching a book about Don Quixote, and so I spent a lot of time in Spain. At the same time, I was in Cuba leading tours of literary Havana. In both instances, this sort of very strong but very dull pain would occupy my leg and the left side of my body. And more I said, you know, I can't do any more travel. This is too difficult to fathom. So I stayed home, and instead of looking forward, as I usually do, I look backward, and that's where the memoir comes in.
You know, I was thinking about Trading with the Enemy, and even though it came out about 14, 15 years ago, think about how well the book has really held up. Not a lot has changed, has it, Tom?
Unfortunately, it has not. No, Cuba is at the low priority as far as something to take care of these days in the State Department and presidency. And so I don't think that there's going to be much change for the near future.
You know, sidelining a travel writer, and you and I share a tremendous love of travel, that must be very, very difficult, not looking forward, but as you say, looking back. But when you do look back, what are some of the highlights, Tom Miller, that pop out? Where did you enjoy traveling the most?
Well, I can name some cities that, you know, here's the answer to that. When I get to a new city, the first 5 minutes I would walk around and say, could I move here? Is this a place that I would feel comfortable in? And sometimes I say, well, maybe. But almost never did I say yes, except for one place. It was not Cuenca, Ecuador, which I felt very fond of. It was not Bisbee, Arizona, where I spent a lot of time. It was in San Sebastian in Spain. After 5 minutes there, I said, you know what? I could pack up and move here in a minute. I never did, but that was the feeling I had.
Was there ever an assignment that you, once you started, Tom Miller, that you regretted taking the assignment and actually traveling to the place?
Not really. There's some where I got far enough along where I said, I really can't finish this the way it deserves to be finished. And that was, I was writing a biography of Jose Martí, the great Cuban scholar and poet and military man as well. And I realized there was just much more to it than I was capable of handling. So I stopped right there and continued on with the work I was doing elsewhere, which was the Don Quixote book.
After I read your book and interviewed you on TV about the Panama Hat Trail, first of all, you can usually still win a trivia question, Tom Miller, by asking someone, what is the origin of the Panama Hat? And the answer isn't Panama, but after interviewing you and reading the book, I went to Ecuador. And I was just, I really fell in love with the place. I loved Ecuador, went out to the Galapagos. How did the Panama Hat Trail book come about?
Well, as a practical matter, my brother was living in Ecuador and I wanted to visit him. But as far as the topic goes, I was looking for something in South America that linked it to North America, something, some connection. Well, Ecuador had two items. It had petroleum, because it's a very severe petroleum country, and it had straw hats. Well, you can't make a choice between those two. Obviously, you want to go with the straw hats. So that's really how that came about, and I've never regretted it.
What is this about Nigeria? You spent a couple of days there at a Jesuit mission in a very dangerous part of the capital city, Lagos, and Lagos is still one of the most dangerous cities in the world. Do you wish you had spent more time there?
Yes, I do. I spent time at the Jesuit mission, and the fellow in charge of it was terrific. He had a sense of humor. He had a sense of right and wrong. He realized his neighbors were very unfriendly, the evangelicals. He did everything he could to promote Jesuit philosophy, and at the same time, he kept weapons. He had a wall safe in case the place got robbed. He just set up a place that made me want to stay for 6 months and write a book. I do regret not having done that, but you can't write every book all the time. You just can't do it.
You mentioned your brother. I believe you dedicated this book to your brother. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it was another brother. But yes, this book was dedicated to my brother, who died about 4 or 5 years ago. And his dedication was to books, Bach, and Blintzes.
Very cool. What about Thornton Wilder? That's an interesting, you had been researching the Pulitzer Prize winner Thornton Wilder at the Yale University Library, and then you followed up by tracing Wilder's hidden life, which was right here in Southern Arizona. A lot of people don't know that Wilder had a connection here.
He did. He stayed at the Arizona Inn when he was in town briefly. He had an apartment on Fifth Avenue near the old YMCA building. But mainly he spent time in Douglas, Arizona. Hard to believe, but it's true. He just he wanted to get away from the East Coast, and just he drove as far as he could. His car broke down about a few miles to the east of Douglas. He took the car in, and then he stayed at the Gadsden Hotel. He'd never heard of it before, of course. He stayed at the Gadsden for 10 days, 2 weeks. Finally, he found a studio apartment to his liking. Nobody in Douglas, Arizona knew who this was, and if they did, they said, "Who's Thornton Wilder?" he was there for a total of 18 months, including right up to the end of the Kennedy years.
So is there another book possible for you?
Possible? That's a good question. Yes, there's another book possible, but perhaps you can suggest what it would be. I can't think of any person I'd rather have a conversation with about travel than you, Bill, for all the travels that you've done. But frankly, I guess I could say I'm traveled out for physical reasons. Like I just can't go much farther than Bisbee in one direction and Phoenix in the other.
Tom, where can folks get a hold of the book?
Well, by now I hope it should be at Antigone. It should be at different bookstores, and certainly it's online. It's at Amazon and some of the other online outlets. So I'm happy to have people get it that way.
All right, Tom Miller, really good chatting with you again. You sound terrific.
Thank you. You do too.
Would you give our listeners, what was that town in Spain that you felt you could live in?
San Sebastian.
San Sebastian. That would be over on the western part of Spain, correct?
Yes, correct.
By the
in the Basque Country.
Yes, in the Basque Country. All right, Tom Miller, always a pleasure, and be safe, stay well. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Good to talk with you.
Nice talking with you, Tom Miller, and talking about his memoir, which is terrific. It's titled, Where Was I? A Travel Writer's Memoir. Tom, he's been everywhere, and I tell you, I love his books, and I had interviewed Tom many, many times when I had the TV show on Channel 6, and he's always been a good interview and great guy. All right, we'll pause right here on The Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Looking for a road trip? Talking with Tom Miller about travel. What about a road trip over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico? Only a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do. Hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Are you a big fan of the blues? The Blues Festival returns after being off because of the pandemic, but they're back over the Memorial Day weekend. Silver City Blues Festival coming up on the Memorial Day weekend. You can find out about that and all sorts of activities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, including where to stay. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome our historian, Ken Scoville, contributor to the Buckmaster Show. Ken has been involved with history and studying history for many decades. Ken, how are you?
I'm fine today, and I would like to add preservation. I've been probably as much involved with historic preservation and trying to say some things so people understand what's gone on and what's happening now in Tucson.
That is a very key point, and very appropriate to have you on, because we'll transition into May, which I believe is National Historic and Historic Preservation Month.
That's correct, and some of what we're going to talk today about Fort Lowell ties in with that national effort that went on partly in the 1930s.
There's been talk about fixing up and some of the rehab at Fort Lowell for years. Ken, are things finally starting to move?
Oh, yes, and there's been some different efforts, even at the turn of the 20th century, with restoring three of the officers' headquarters, two or more in ruins. One, if you're driving north on Craycroft, when you get almost to the park, you'll see on your left that there's some restored buildings, and those were done just after the turn of the 21st century. But now there's a huge plan going forward, thanks to the bond issue from the city of Tucson and also some Heritage State Parks Fund money.
Ken, what does the master plan encompass? Could you kind of give us an overview on that?
Sure. In fact, I'm up on my computer, and I've got it all in front of me. But first of it, it's sort of in general, we want to protect the natural and cultural resources, and that's been sort of fragmented in different times over the last 100 years. And then especially interesting to me, reveal all the layers of history and define Fort Lowell. And this idea of ghosting. And what ghosting means is that a lot of things have been lost or the buildings are just in ruins. And they're putting up new shelters to protect and maintain the ruins and the adobe buildings. But it fills out the rest of what the actual structure used to look like. And those officers' quarters that are west of Craycroft have that same effect. And that should go for the new hospital when they do the new restoration over the ruins and a partial of the building of the hospital. It's going to sort of fill it out with the roof lines and the protective covering so you can see the actual size of the hospital, which was much larger than what the ruins we see today.
What's this idea, what they call preservationists call ghosting?
Well, a little bit, and just maybe a really good example, if you've ever been to Philadelphia, who would think someone would tear down Ben Franklin's home, but the later generations and his family did for income apartments. When the historical, the National Park Service went back and they built a structure based over the archaeology they did. So when you go in there, you see a metal frame outline of what the building used to look like. At Fort Lowell, like I said, mentioned earlier, where there's ruins or partial walls, you want to protect those adobe walls that remain, but the roof and overlay of protection will also define and give you a sense of how large the building was before its decline.
Was the fort a fairly large footprint out there?
Oh, yes. In fact, when people drive by, they don't realize that there's almost, let's say, a third of the actual fort site. The park's much bigger, but a third of the fort site is actually west of Craycroft Road. And one of the things that I mentioned and want to talk about is that in Claycroft Road, they're actually going to embed into the road some of the features in the geography so people start getting an idea that the post extended farther to the west. Also, they're going to redo Cottonwood Lane, revise what's there, and add more cottonwood trees, and they will extend all the way to the west on the other side of Craycroft, so people will see an outline of what the whole parade grounds were like.
They're going to have a whole orientation area welcoming visitors. I'm sure there'll probably be a gift shop, a new museum as well, Ken.
Yes, and realizing that the first museum that we visited today was run by the Arizona Historical Society, but because of their financial issues and funding issues from the state, now other agencies and people are trying to sort of revitalize that. That was built in the early 1960s as the first real major effort to get this protected, making it a county park and building new buildings to interpret the past. But there's going to be a brand new museum just east of the hospital on the east side of the parade grounds to interpret all the history also.
When the Army, what was the timeline when the Army used the fort? When did they then abandon it?
Okay, well, realizing that the military was first based down in downtown Tucson and really coming out first in 1862 to capture Tucson back for the Union, whether we'd actually sided with the Confederacy for a couple of months. So they were downtown for about, and then the military left and came back. But essentially from 1863 to 73 downtown, and then really from 73 on to closing in 1891, they were out of what we think of as Fort Lowell. Fort Lowell being a more permanent adobe buildings establishment, and downtown, believe it or not, all the soldiers were in tents. The Ramadas over the tents so they wouldn't fly in the summer. But Fort Lowell, as a permanent installation, was there until 1891.
Was there any effort in 1891 to preserve the buildings, or did they just fall into ruin?
Well, what really went on, and I'm sure this goes on with any military post, they essentially auctioned off anything that people wanted, doors, windows, anything, all that gets stripped away, and all the buildings are just left out in the desert to a road away in the desert.
Hmm. But the Boy Scouts used to camp out there, right?
Yes, and just by 1912, the Boy Scouts were camping there, and at the same time, and a little earlier, we had a lot of Mexican farmers moving into the area, and they would restore some of the adobe buildings for their own homes, and they're maybe taking adobe blocks from those buildings and taking them to a new location. So we've had some kind of adaption preservation really going on. And then a little later in the 1940s, George Babbitt from up in Flagstaff area, who's a merchant up there, he bought the land and then returned it to the Boy Scouts. And I guess there were some fees and things, but only for $220.
Wow. So what we see now is some of these covers, the protective cover for the post hospital. This was sort of a patchwork of fixes for the area.
Right. Given the efforts, and there's always been a struggle in Tucson, especially in the 50s and 60s, and thinking about urban renewal in the 60s, it's like, can we build a Circle K there? It's not necessarily that we want to preserve something. So the Boy Scouts actually did fundraising work to get the remodel of the hospital. Then the county started doing more efforts when the county bought the land. Also, in the 1930s, some artists, Pete Mann and Charles Boethius, came out there and they just saw the Post Traders Post, which is a very large, wonderful building, and then the Commissary Building, which is very close to the north west corner of Fort Lowell and Craycroft, and they restored those. And one was a group of apartments, the Commissary, and then the other building, the Traders Post, became their residence. So we've had different efforts, and then in the 1970s and 80s, when Fort Lowell becomes an historic district and the whole neighborhood that surrounds it.
So just a few seconds left. What kind of a grade would you give Tucson here as we enter May and Restoration and Preservation Month? What kind of grade would you give our efforts of late?
All right. I would give the county probably a B+. I would give, in the old days, almost give a D- to the city. Most of the preservation has been grassroots, hard fought, better vision. And what we have today has really been the people in the neighborhoods and the citizens that care. And I think as more of late, I like to think that the city's finally getting back on board, like this project that we're seeing moving forward right now that will begin in about a year from now. And there'll be more information online for people to discover.
Okay, sounds good. Historian and preservationist Ken Scoville. Thanks, Ken.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Ken Scoville and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program, that will wrap it up for our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. We'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll be speaking with the new parks director. Speaking of parks in Fort Lowell, we'll speak with the new parks director for the city of Tucson. Also, Bob Hendricks, Dr. Hendricks, our education contributor, joins us. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.